and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Wednesday, September 14th, 2016. There's still quite a lot of news happening in the world of Zika. So for the latest, we go to Dr. Henry Nyman. Dr. Nyman, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks, Ryan. There have been quite a few developments in the last few days. I thought I'd cover each of them briefly. One has to do with experiments in pigtail macaques that generated microcephaly. The other was, which was published yesterday, the sequence of the virus, the spreading in Singapore was published today. And all week there have been ongoing developments in Florida indicating that the outbreak there is fairly significant and the reporting is still a little bit suspect. So I wanted to start out with the paper that came out yesterday. It was in Nature Medicine. It was a group up in Seattle, Washington. And they had done an experiment that another group actually did not have success with. Another group used a slightly different non-human primate or rhesus macaque. And they tried to, they infected pregnant monkeys and look to see if the Zika use there would affect the brain development of the fetus, and they really didn't get much in their experiments. But this group up in Seattle, they actually only had one pregnant monkey at the time that they decided to do their experiment. So it wasn't exactly ideal. Mother was at equivalent to 28 weeks gestation in humans, which would actually be the third trimester. And they took the virus. Actually, they didn't have the virus from Brazil, so they used the virus that had been isolated in Cambodia in 2010, which is an Asian version, but it's slightly different than the version that's in the Americas. And they basically mimicked a mosquito bite with injecting it in four places into the mother's forearm. There is a little bit of a difference between what they did and the group that did not have success. There's quite a range in the level of virus that's picked up in a mosquito, ranging from a 100 copies to 10 million copies. And so they ended up using the high end. They used 10 million copies. The other group really took the number in the middle, used 10,000. And whether that level was the difference or whether the species was the difference isn't clear. But the group in Seattle was actually one for one. They really only had one macaque to work with who was pregnant. And they injected her, and within 10 days, they did see differences in the brain of the fetus. They saw that its growth slowed. It affected primarily the white matter in the brain. And they did an autopsy. They terminated the pregnancy and did an autopsy at the equivalent to 38 weeks and did indeed find the virus in the brain. It was at the highest levels in the brain. It was present in a few other tissues. They also found it in the mother, so it did persist. In the mother, she had some in her brain, but it was more virus was in her spleen. And they took radiological readings at various stages in the pregnancy and went into detail about the changes and noted that many of the changes were similar to what's been seen in MRIs of human cases where the mother had been infected. In this case, the mother did not develop symptoms. She was asymptomatic, although she clearly had virus at autopsy. And in spite of not having symptoms in the mother, the baby was infected and essentially developed. Technically, it wasn't quite microcephaly if they let the pregnancy go to full term. It was on its way to hitting that cutoff, but the brain's development definitely slowed and there were structural changes. So this is kind of Koch's postulate. There's a number of things that are required to meet it, but the main one is to have an experimental model where the etiological agent produces the disease in the animal. And that's essentially what happened. So this pretty much removes any doubt, and the doubt is really only people that haven't been paying attention, that the virus itself does cause microcephaly. It works in an experimental model, and it essentially produces the same types of changes. It's called fetal brain disruption sequence that are seen in humans, and in this case it shows that at least at the level they use, which is at the higher end and 4 bytes equivalent, they were actually able to produce changes in the third trimester. In the human cases, most of the microcephaly cases anyway are due to infections in the first trimester or the very beginning of the second trimester. So this is a red flag that kind of indicates that the virus, A, goes to the fetal brain, and B, can potentially cause damage at multiple stages of the pregnancy. The endpoint is microcephaly. That seems to be largely limited to the first trimester, but in this case, it looks like even further along in the pregnancy. Again, it's a shorter gestation period in a different species, but they were able to induce these types of changes. So that's one data set. Actually, in addition to showing that the Zika causes microcephaly, this experiment actually was important from the standpoint of the virus. The Zika that was used is not the Zika that's in the U.S. It was a virus. It was isolated in 2010 from Cambodia. The viruses really fall into two major groups. One group is the African one that came from the original virus that was identified in 1947 in Uganda in the Zika forest. A Malaysia, an Asian version was identified in Malaysia in 1966, and that goes went on to form the lineage that's referred to as the Asian lineage. The virus in the Americas is the Asian lineage, and the virus in Southeast Asia, including the one used in this experiment, is also the Asian lineage, but they can be distinguished. They kind of phylogenetically, they fall into separate branches. And so this experiment showed not only does Zika cause microcephaly, but that the Asian version that's circulating in Southeast Asia causes microcephaly in animals, suggesting that it's certainly going to be capable of causing microcephaly in humans, just like the version that's in the Americas. And that distinction was raised because of Singapore. As I mentioned a few days ago, Singapore has a fairly dramatic outbreak of Zika, they're up to, I guess it's 341 cases now, and that happened in about 10 days. It was a dramatic increase in the number of cases. I think the number of clusters is up to 7. And that created some concerns because the number of cases went up so dramatically and quickly. But it was noted that the Singapore virus was not the virus in the Americas. You know, it was slightly different. It was the virus that had been seen in Southeast Asia. And so the experiment with the macaque indicated that there's no reason to assume that the virus in Singapore is not going to cause microcephaly. There was some speculation that it happened wait and see, and of course, you know, extrapolate from a non-human primate to a human is still an extrapolation. So it'll take a little bit of time to see if this outbreak in Singapore does cause microcephaly. But there are quite a few, I think there are at least 8 pregnant women in this group that were Zika positive, and the sequence that was released today confirms that indeed it is the virus that phylogenetically is similar to the virus that has been seen in Southeast Asia, including the virus that was used in this experiment in Nature Medicine. So and it's going to be a little bit interesting because some other countries appear to have both versions of the Asian virus. They have the virus that's been in Southeast Asia, and they have the virus that's in the Americas. And with Singapore, there's a fairly large outbreak, although there's a couple hundred cases in Thailand also. And so it's going to offer the possibility that these two different lineages are going to co-infect and recombine. And the virus may, in fact, actually evolve a little bit quickly due to recombination between the two different Asian lineages, which are co-circulating now in a few different countries in Southeast Asia. So WHO did sound an alarm that the situation with Zika may become significant in South Asia as well as Southeast Asia, with the virus going into India and going into China as well as Southeast Asia, and potentially Australia even. So there's a slightly different lineage that's in the South Pacific Islands, you know, like Samoa, Fiji, and a bunch of those sequences were just recently released. And again, those lineages are also distinct from the one in Southeast Asia as well as the one in the Americas. So there's really 3 different, clades or subclades that are circulating right now in that region. They seem to be taking off, at least with Singapore and, of course, the Americas. Now, as far as the level of the virus, some saw the number of cases that were reported in Singapore and thought that was dramatic, and maybe there's something different about that virus and it's able to spread very effectively. But if you look at the numbers, the big increase in Singapore may be more related to how aggressive they were collecting samples and tracing contacts. As I said, they're up to 7 clusters now, although they are all kind of in the eastern portion of Singapore. And the numbers that came out of Florida this week raised the possibility that the level of Zika, at least in the Miami area, may in fact be not that different than Singapore. The reporting has been a little bit delayed, apparently, in a locus suspect, as I mentioned earlier, on September 1st. All the metrics were pulled. And so it's a little bit harder to figure out exactly what's going on based upon how many samples have been tested and what kind of results. Concerns were raised, and the Department of Health says all you have to do is ask. And so we'll see how easy it is to get the data. But when the data was pulled on September 1st, there were some significant question marks, particularly with the pending cases. And one of the examples were the cases out of Wynwood. Wynwood was the initial outbreak. Most of the cases there showed symptoms in July and the beginning of August. And in the middle of, I guess it was August, there were four cases that had been in the pending category for quite some time, and then they were announced that they were positive, and they just were held as pending because they were waiting for confirmation from the CDC. Just to briefly recall that there's actually three different tests that are done for Zika infection. One is a PCR test, which simply measures the presence of the virus's RNA. That can be done with urine or serum. Generally, that's done fairly quickly, and it gives a pretty conclusive result because the other flavored viruses are tested in tandem. And that requires the virus to be present. It's usually good for a week after symptom onset for the blood and 2 weeks for the urine. But if samples are collected after the patient is no longer symptomatic, they pretty much have to resort to an antibody test. And there's a quicker antibody test that's done by the state of Florida, which is just an ELISA test. And that determines whether there's antibodies that react with Zika. But then if they get a positive on that, the samples are sent to the CDC, which is called a PRNT neutralization test. It's a plaque reduction, so you actually need the virus growing, and you add the serum, and you look for plaques, which are proportionate to the amount of viruses there. And the number of plaques goes down, that means that the antibodies are neutralizing the virus, keeping it from affecting other cells. And that you can get very conclusive data when you do it in parallel, so you can see how the neutralizing antibody levels for Zika as well as dengue or and chikungunya and conclusively say that the antibodies are there because they're reactive with the Zika virus. And so these pending samples are samples that have been sent to the CDC, and they should already be positive in Florida based upon their ELISA. And so the ELISA assay says that there's Zika antibodies there, and then the CDC confirms that it's due to Zika and not one of the other related flavivirus viruses. And so when there were four pending from Wynwood, and they then were switched over to positive, the Department of Health said, well, they just got the results from the CDC. They had to exclude the possibility that it was chikungunya or dengue, and indeed they were cases that had been symptomatic in July, but they didn't really get the results until, towards the end of August. And the pending samples for Wynwood went to zero. And then a few days later, there was a pending sample again, and then a day or two after that, that one was also cited as being positive, and it was the same thing, that it was pending because they were waiting for the CDC. But again, it was from a sample that was in July, symptomatic in July, So it was unclear why the pending samples went to zero after the four were announced, and then it went back to one, and then back to zero again after this one was announced a few days later. And so this week, there was another set of Wynwood positive samples. And again, these are from cases. There were two that were announced on Monday and another one that was announced on Tuesday. The Monday was from two cases that were symptomatic in mid-July. The one on Tuesday was symptomatic on early August. And so, again, it's kind of like there's two sets of books. There's a set of books that are following the cases that were collected, were positive in Florida, and they're waiting for results in by the CDC, confirmation by the CDC. And they're not really being released to the public. They're not being, they're not sitting in the table as pending. They're just all of a sudden appearing. Or if they do show up pending, they're put in that table long after they actually went into the pending category, because they would have been pending, when they got a positive in Florida and sent it off to CDC. So in any event, the pending cases for the ones out of Wynwood are a little bit suspect. They seem to appear long after the fact. And since they haven't really been releasing any metrics, exactly what they're releasing to media that ask, a little bit unclear because I haven't seen that data yet. But in addition to these cases in Wynwood, with two on Monday and one on Tuesday, the Miami Beach numbers are going up. That there were two of those on Monday. There were four on Tuesday, and there was another one today. And so there's clearly a lot of activity at Miami Beach, and that's just for the Florida residents. One thing that did change this week, and probably because of the Miami Herald article at the end of last week that indicated that non-residents were not being reported, it turns out there were eight non-residents as of last week that had actually come to Florida, were positive, but were not being reported by Florida because they were residents of other states or other countries. That number actually went up to nine this week, so now there are nine cases. And exporting of cases, these are people that don't live in Florida. They come to Florida as a tourist for business or pleasure, and manage to get bit by a mosquito, and in many cases don't develop symptoms until they return home, and then they get confirmed in these other countries or other states. That's a major red flag, because if somebody comes here and gets infected, they're only here for a short time period, and so local residents would be in the same area wherever they got infected, wherever the tourists were infected. And the tourists should be a small subset of the number of cases that are actually being reported. And so there's now nine tourists, so there's nine known exports of the virus from, actually they don't give the location. The first three they did, they were at Miami Beach. It's lucky that many of these additional ones from tourists are also at Miami Beach. And there have been four batches of mosquitoes that have been positive for Zika that were at Miami Beach. So it's clear that there's a major outbreak at Miami Beach, and it would not be at all surprising if the outbreak at Miami Beach is similar to the outbreak in Singapore as far as the number of cases are concerned. And it's just a matter of how aggressive the Florida Department of Health is going to be on collecting those samples and testing them. But in addition to the two known areas of active transmission, On Monday, there was another local case announced for Palm Beach. There were three more cases announced for Miami-Dade. And then on Tuesday, there was a fourth case for Miami-Dade. So there's really been five local transmissions this week that have been announced that are not at Wynwood or Miami Beach, indicating that the virus is probably in mosquitoes in multiple locations in Florida, and finding two to define an area of active transmission is somewhat dependent upon how aggressive the testing is before the data was pulled from the active investigation page. There were indications that some of these active investigations weren't being very aggressively pursued. Two of the investigations had zero samples collected, and two of the other ones had a minimal number. One had three, one had six. And even on the one with six, there were five that were pending that were then tend to be negative. And, you know, the explanation for what those pending cases are and why they turned up negative is still a bit obscure. So in summary, there is a lot of activity still in Florida. There was a little bit of lull in local cases towards the end of last week. This week has been gangbusters with eight cases announced on Monday and six cases announced on Tuesday and another one announced today. And so there is quite a bit of activity, especially since the amount of testing in Florida is probably not that aggressive based upon what kind of numbers were being posted before all the metrics were pulled. So we're trying to get a copy of what the latest metrics are. Apparently, you got to ask each day to see the data. Exactly why it's not on the website is still a little bit obscure. And I said it was created too much confusion and did create some confusion, but the confusion was basically related to how aggressively the testing was being done and how much active testing there was and how much was passive. It looks like a lot of these positives that are showing up are due to passive testing, especially the ones outside of the two active investigation areas. And so that kind of wraps things up for today. I think we're going to try to do shorter reports and do them a little bit more frequently, and that's what the game plan is.
Okay, and just for the record, we actually requested some metrics from Florida yesterday, and still haven't heard back on that. So take that for what it's worth. So that'll do it for today. So to all our listeners, visit our website at recombinomics.co, and everyone have a good day.